time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 22nd of June 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oniroa. On Saturday the 22nd of June, Christina Patterson joined the Island Life team for her first show. She talked to a volunteer from Homegrown Waiheke, Waiheke's Youth Council rep Marta Roche, Robin Wilson from WICOS, Gary Bell from Waiheke Health Trust, and Di Stoddart from Waiheke Library.
All right, you're listening to Island Life this Saturday morning, and Christina Patterson here. And we are speaking to actually Homegrown Waiheke. And you may not Homegrown Waiheke may not necessarily know what Homegrown Waiheke is, so let's hear about that.
Yes, sure. Well, Homegrown Waiheke is basically it's a local initiative to quite simply encourage people to grow vegetables in their own home gardens, to create their own gardens and develop confidence in growing their own food.
And so what got you started doing that? You know, what was the passion or the values that you kind of had to starting something like that?
Well, there's a little group of us, five of us, who form a sort of core group who are making it happen. And all of us share, a concern about what's happening in the wider world, and that as an island, the Waiheke community is very vulnerable to being cut off. And that one of the most basic things that you need, you know, in order to go on surviving is to be able to feed yourselves. Right. And so I guess there was an awareness in that wider sense that we are concerned that people are losing those skills, that over the last couple of generations people have not grown up with their parents having a veg patch in the back garden so much. So we wanted to revive those skills, partly in the like immediate sense that it's really good to be able to grow your own healthy vegetables. It saves you money. It's fun. It's a really neat thing to do and neat thing to share with your kids. But in the longer term, it could be really important for us as a community.
And that brings us really to sustainability, which is what we were talking about earlier. And I have to say that I don't know what's happened to me since I got to Waiheke, but sustainability seems to be something that I'm really interested in, and city girls turn country. What does sustainability mean to you in terms of in terms of this project and what you're wanting to encourage families to do?
Well, sustainability really is, I guess, one of the key values that we all share. And that's also the reason that we have decided that we are encouraging an organic approach and what we call a closed system approach to gardening. So rather than encouraging people to go out and buy a whole lot of fertilisers and insecticides and things that have to come from off the island for a start, and that often have long-term undesirable effects on our island environment, we're encouraging people to think about, as far as possible, doing everything with what we've already got within our own community or what we can get easily. So as well as teaching people how to put in a bed and plant some vegetables, we also, our mentors teach our families how to compost, and we really encourage people to use materials and build up systems just with stuff that they can get very cheap or for free. So we're, you know, it's kind of sustainability but in a really practical way, so it makes sense. You know, it's cheaper to use materials that you've got lying around. It makes sense to compost your own vegetable scraps and waste rather than always buying bags of stuff. And practical sustainability.
And it's just really using the resources that are available to you. I think one thing about Waiheke is that it's... we've got space, which in Auckland, you know, you're likely to have a townhouse that you're looking down on, or, you know, whereas in Waiheke we do tend to have a bit of lawn or a bit of backyard.
That's exactly right.
So it's using that space, isn't it?
It's using that space, and it means we have more options, so that, for example, as you say, if you've got a townhouse, then you're certainly not going to be able to put in a hot composting system, which doesn't mean you can't compost, by the way, because there are systems that, you know, for any situation. I have to say that one of the things that we learnt, because I have been involved in similar projects on Waiheke in the past, and one of the things we learnt was that for some people, if they're in an unstable rental situation, that, for example, growing your vegetables in container gardens might be the way to go, because then you can take it with you if you have to move.
Yeah.
So we're also very flexible in our approach, and we try and think through what's this person's situation, what's going to work for them, and then make it work.
I mean, the good thing about vegetable gardens and even with rentals is that it's not like you're putting in something that you're not going to take with you, in the sense that you harvest, don't you? You know, however many months later, you're benefiting from that vegetable.
You definitely do. I guess we have been doing, just starting to do some work with the budgeting service, and their concern is for families where you could put in quite a lot of work, you know, getting a garden established, and then you're given notice before you
get to see
the benefits. That's right.
Yeah.
So we just look at people's situations
and work with what you've got.
That's right.
And do you? So tell me a little bit about what families you have been working with, and is there any particular type of family that you look to work with?
No, there's not actually. Obviously, you know, there's always a concern that people who are struggling financially, you know, that this would be really of benefit to them, and that's one reason that we have been talking with the budgeting service to see whether they've got families who might like to come onto the program. But we're really very open as to who we accept. It's more about wanting to get those skills out into the community, and so therefore if people are willing to put in the work but really lack the knowledge and the confidence, then they're very welcome to contact us and, you know, go on the waiting list.
That's fantastic. Mm. So you've got a bit of a waiting list, have you?
Well, what we've done is we've got funding to put in 10 gardens over a 12-month period, because one of the things we do is we loan each family $110 to get them started.
Wow.
And that funding came to us through the New Hope Shop. So what we've done is we've got funding for 10 families. We have put in 5 gardens so far through the autumn. We're now taking a pause. We're going to just see that those gardens get properly established, that we're doing everything right, you know, look at really supporting those families and the mentors who have been teamed up with the families, and then we'll be putting another 5 in the spring. So yes, we have families on our spring waiting list. We have room for more, and very happy to hear from people.
Oh, that's great. And so your 5 people that are, I guess, your core team, do you find that sufficient, or are you always looking for volunteers, or...?
We're always looking for volunteers. The 5 people on the core group is sufficient just for keeping the whole thing ticking over. But we have had some fantastic volunteers who have come in, and for example, we do a working bee for each family to get their garden started. So we've had wonderful people coming in and just putting in the hard labour, you know, breaking up the ground, building raised beds, building compost bins, those kinds of things. We've had other people who have germinated seedlings for us that we can offer to our families at a really low price that they can pay for out of their $110 loan. We've had people who've donated sheep manure, hay, you know, all sorts of goods. Central Landscapers came forward and said that they would donate topsoil to our first 5 families. We've had a fantastic response from the community.
That's really heartwarming, isn't it? And it's you know, it makes me, reminds me why I'm here in Waiheke, you know, to have that kind of community response, I guess, just to want to support families in that way. And so I guess another question really would be, you know, what advice would you give someone who perhaps has never done gardening before, is thinking about starting, or is wondering what the benefits would be versus the time it takes, obviously. What advice would you give them?
Well, the first thing I'd say is start small. We're not putting in great big vegetable gardens. We're just putting in enough that the family, whatever size it is, will be able to successfully maintain, and you can always get bigger. So even if it is just a few pots, or, you know, on your veranda, or a small raised bed somewhere sunny and sheltered in your backyard. So that would be the first thing. And the other thing I'd say is believe you can do it. Because, you know, when something's brand new and it can be scary, and maybe you haven't done it before and you weren't brought up perhaps with those skills and knowledge, the first time something goes wrong, it's easy to think, oh, I knew I was no good at this. Mm. You know, or your first composting heap goes smelly and sludgy. You know, it's happened to all of us. And you go, oh, I knew I couldn't do it. It's like, no, it's just something needs to change. So ask around, get some advice, look up a book, and keep on trying. Mm. But that's where our system, where we team up each family with a mentor for 12 months, and that's really key. Wow. Because that is a person who has been gardening on the island for some time, and they're there, so when things don't go as expected or you're not sure what to do, that's the person each family has to contact them and say, hey, what do I do about this?
Yeah.
And also someone who can come over and, I mean, it's a hands-on thing. Mm. Practically demonstrate how you do things.
Yeah. Mm. I have to say, I mean, I became a gardener when I came to Waiheke, actually. And I was really surprised because my mother always gardened, but I never gardened with her. And I think I was really surprised that I enjoyed it. I was really surprised by that. And so I guess that's an encouragement to people as well, that you might surprise yourself that you actually do enjoy even just pulling out weeds. It's got to be it's the worst job, but it actually can be quite rewarding. The progress and achievement that you feel.
I do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's rewarding on every level. Mm. You know, and it's to harvest your own vegetables and, you know, produce a meal out of food that you have grown yourself.
Yes.
Is there's just no describing it. You feel so pleased with yourself.
Yes. Yeah. And I do actually, and I haven't harvested yet. Obviously, I've been planting and so on. I haven't had time to harvest. But you know, even just every little part of gardening is rewarding. Just having something clear, having something pretty, having you know, having seedlings grow, that you've planted seeds and there's little seedlings now, you know, all the way through, it kind of rewards you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's quite magic, really. Mm. And I've been personally getting more into growing stuff from seed. And, you know, you look at a seed and you just can't believe that it's going to turn into a plant.
I know,
and you're going to eat it.
I'm still amazed that anything comes from that tiny little thing, yeah.
I think something else, I mean, that you find when you're growing your own vegetables is they just taste so good.
Yeah.
That fresh out of the garden. Mm. People say it over and over again and it's a cliche, but it is true that stuff tastes better.
Yeah. Mm. Good form of exercise, good getting out in the fresh air, so many benefits. And also cost saving as well, because we know that, you know, fruit and vegetables can be pretty dear on the island, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that is a big part of it for us, is that it's going to help families save money.
Yeah. Mm. That's great. Mm. Hey, thanks for coming along. It's really amazing to hear what you're doing. Do you have contact details for how people can get in touch if they want to volunteer, if they want to contribute, or even if they're a family that you know, might like to go onto the waiting list?
Yep, sure. People can ring me at home. My number's 372-7367. 7367. Yeah, and just very happy to talk to anyone who wants to be involved.
Great, thank you so much for coming in. Wakey Radio. We've got Matariki Roche with us this morning. Thanks for coming in, Matariki.
Oh, welcome. Thank you for having me.
Do you like to be called Matariki or do you like to be called Mata?
I don't really mind. Mata's probably easier because it's just shorter.
Yeah.
Less of a soundbite. Big words. Hard to handle.
Now, I am really, really interested to talk to you because, you know, a little while ago when I first got in touch with you, it was children. I think it was Youth and Children's Day or Families Day or something like that.
Youth Week probably.
Yeah, yeah. And I was one of the questions I've really wanted to ask you, I mean, we'll talk about some of the stuff that you're involved in, obviously on Youth Council and stuff.
I'd really
like to hear that. But I also really wanted to know, you know, what led you to being interested in Youth Council or politics or, you know, any of that kind of thing? Because I'm just thinking of, are you 16?
I'm 14.
14?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was thinking about what I was doing at age 14 and it wasn't that. So really, really interested to hear, you know.
Yeah.
What led you here?
Well, I've been heavily influenced by my parents. So my mum's an MP, so that's obviously quite a big thing. But ever since I was little, I've been really involved with and really strongly thought about what's there and what's not, and so I really think it's not fair that youth didn't have a voice. That was before I was on the Youth Council and stuff, and so I saw this opportunity to represent us Waiheke youth, and I was like, yeah, this is awesome, this needs to happen. I was like, I'll give it a go, and so I was actually quite surprised that I got in because there was quite a few really well-known people on the island who run and stuff, and I was like, oh god, there's all these big older kids running and I'm not sure if I'll get in and stuff, but I'm really glad that I did and it's awesome. So
yeah. And you know, I guess in terms of like influence and stuff, I guess your mum's been a big influence and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're kind of more aware of what's going on simply because she's talking about it, or what?
Well, we have at home, we have big discussions about like political issues and stuff, but up until recently, I'd normally just zone out when they started talking about politics. I was like, oh, that political thing, yeah. But I guess I do have more of a awareness about what's going on purely because my dad are already always talking about it and stuff. But I think I find my own ways to get information and stuff. And one of the big things for me is one of the big things I want to do is make sure that everyone knows about the big stuff that's happening because... Yeah. A lot of young people do just zone out of politics and stuff at our age and stuff, which I completely understand. But when it comes to stuff involving us, that's about us, I think we should be more onto it and more knowing about what's going on. So,
do you think, you know, how do you, when you're talking to other young people about issues, do you find, you know, do you find that there's a lack of interest there, or do you find that... there is interest there, but they just weren't aware, or how do you find it when you're talking to them?
It depends who I'm talking to, because the thing about Waiheke is that we have, actually, the thing about everyone is that we're really diverse and we've got a lot of different people talking about different issues, and so it's more about the fact that you've got to find the interests, the issues that interest specific groups of people and stuff. So, like, obviously the skate park issue that interests the skaters and stuff, but when it comes to wider, like, more government issues and stuff, you've got to... I don't think many people actually do know about those issues, and they'd kind of need to... That's one of the things what I really enjoy about social studies lessons and stuff, is that you have big group discussions about issues going around at the moment. So, yeah.
I think... you know, I mean, obviously, when you're young, there's just so much going on in your life to focus on, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important for young people to know that they are a really important part of the community, and for them to feel that they're valued. And I'm assuming that's why they've formed a youth council, simply because, I mean, youth are our next generation, they're going to be our next leaders, this is going to be the world, you know, we're creating the world that they're going to be living in.
Yeah, exactly.
When we're gone, you know. So yeah. I think it's really important that they do have a voice.
Yeah, we've got to have opinions and make sure that our opinions are heard on, like, issues that are going to affect us more than they're going to affect you guys, like your generation.
I know you had, you know, I was obviously reading through the Gulf News, and I know that you had, you know, some seven issues or seven principles that you came up with. But just in your conversations, what things are really important to young people? And I'm actually thinking specifically on Waiheke now. You know, when you talk to your friends, I mean, you've talked about the skate park, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's really important to young people on Waiheke at the moment?
There are lots of different issues, like, depending on different groups. But one that's quite common is transport, especially going into town and around Waiheke and stuff. That can be quite a big issue to talk about with people. Like, me and my friends were talking about it. Actually yesterday, about the hop card system and getting out, especially for people who are in clubs for soccer or for rugby or whatever, that have to get out there. That's quite a tough issue, and the prices for the ferries, that can get quite tough and stuff.
Yeah. And do you feel that there's perhaps enough space for young people to, I guess, feel valued on the island, you know, that they're being considered in decisions?
I think that it could be a lot. There's room for improvement, definitely. And I think that that we're probably going to see a bit of change of weight and change of perspectives as the new local board comes in. Like, obviously, there's going to be a big shift up there. So hopefully more involvement with that. And yeah, but another thing that it's really needs to be highlighted is positive media on young people, because quite often you hear about, oh, those rowdy teenagers getting up to mischief and stuff, but really I think we need more positive media on us. But that's one of the great things that I like about Waiheke, is that we do have more positive media than there is in town and stuff, but still there's always room for improvement. So
yeah. Now, tell me a little bit about this Put Me First thing. So I was really interested. You've come up with seven main ideas, and I'll read these out, actually.
Yeah.
So the first goal is I have a voice, am valued and contribute. Yep. The other six goals are I am important, belong and am cared about. I feel safe. I can get around and get connected. Auckland is my playground. I am happy, healthy and thriving. And all rangatahi will thrive, and I'm given equal opportunities to succeed and be given a fair go. So those are pretty good goals.
I mean, yeah.
And the seven goals, it says here that it's on the website, which is www.putmefirst.co.nz, and people can actually comment and offer help and suggestions in relation to each goal. So, and what sort of comments are they putting, or suggestions are they putting in?
Well, it's more of a thing where you sign up and you say, it's more like you're signing in to say what things you've done or what things you've done previously or you're planning on doing to help young people. Just it's kind of like a motivator type thing, and so that we get an idea of what's already being done at the moment. So some ones are more like individuals saying that they've done some tutoring or like had cheap tutoring for uni or high school students. And then there's like business groups who've said like they're having equal opportunities for young people to get jobs, or making sure that they have young people in their business sector area. So
it's really an opportunity, isn't it, for individuals, community, businesses, to kind of create a positive future, isn't it, for young people?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, Len Brown, I was just noticing here, I thought it was really interesting that he said some of our most disadvantaged communities are those in which they anticipate increased numbers of children and young people in the coming years, and that, you know, something has to be done now to improve their prospects. And he went on to say the research shows that children and young people who grow up disadvantaged are more likely to have poor educational achievement, poor health outcomes, and be unemployed on leaving school. So I guess this is a positive way of trying to have an input into young people's lives. I mean, you're 14, so, you know, hard question to answer, okay, but... You know, what do you think it might be the difference between somebody who's perhaps had a maybe a troubled upbringing, maybe not, or just had a troubled, they're on a troubled path, shall we say, as a young person? What's the difference, you know, what would it take for them to get off that path and onto a better path?
Probably support and knowing that there are opportunities out there for them, like... big issue is actually knowing that there are jobs in place or options that you can take, or like knowing that you can, if you want to do something, you are able to achieve it and actually get out there.
Yeah. And yeah. so you need people to believe that and about you, don't you?
Yeah.
And you know, I guess the wonderful opportunity with Waiheke is that we are a smallish community, so
yeah, so it's quite easy to get support from people. It's great.
So long as they're putting up their hand and doing that. So what an amazing opportunity for Waiheke to actually put forward their offers of support, their ideas, their suggestions. And it says here, you know, Aucklanders have got from now until 12th. So they can they can do that on the website. I'll just read it out again. www.putmefirst.co.nz. And I just noticed here, actually, in that Gulf News article, that you said that it's this experience interesting and more demanding than you ever imagined. So I was interested to hear what's more interesting, what's more demanding about it.
It's not so much demanding, it's just the fact that I've got to find the balance between it. It's because the meeting, I'm on the 10:15 boat home normally getting back from Auckland, so finding the balance of school and being able to actually do the stuff for council, it's quite a bit difficult. But I think also I underestimated how much work it would take to set up a youth council, because that's one of the big things that I want done, and so that's kind of a bit tough, so that's a bit more difficult. But on the more interesting side, it's really cool to hang out with all these amazing young people who are just so great and inspiring. It's awesome. So that's...
Yeah, sounds incredible. It sounds like something people I'd like to hang out with, actually.
Yeah, they're lovely people.
Yeah, I mean, it inspires me that at 14 years of age that you can be involved in something and care about your community, your society, about young people, and doing something really, really positive.
Yeah.
It's really encouraging. And, you know, I might be new to Waiheke, but I must say that we are proud of you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for coming along this morning.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
And, you know, we'll be watching how you're doing and we'll be supporting...
Yeah.
You know, what you're doing as
Thank
well.
Thank you.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. Right, you're listening to Island Life, and it is Christina Patterson here talking with YCOS, Robin Wilson, and also Gary Bell. So, Robin, tell us a little bit about YCOS this morning.
Well, thank you, Christina. It's nice to be here on this lovely winter Waiheke morning. Waiheke Island Council of Social Services, YCOS, like the rest of the community on Waiheke, are still reeling over the sudden death of our leader, Hero Mons.
Mm.
Hero has been our chair for many, many years, and as she did with everything, put her heart and soul into YCOS. So she's going to be a huge void in our business. We've got our AGM coming up on the 20th of August, and one of the roles we'll have to do is find a replacement chair. Hero's shoes are going to be big to fill. Another exciting thing that we've got coming up is on the 20th and 21st of September, we have been fortunate enough to secure funds from the New Hope Shop of $4,000 towards some assist workshops. Mm. Now, assist, train people in suicide prevention,
right,
giving them tools to help people that are at risk and just guiding them in the right direction. So they're very beneficial and highly recommended. I've done one myself a few years ago, and good tools to have. Mm. We've also got a workshop coming up later in September on the use of social media to promote services, specifically for not-for-profit organisations. So that also promises to be an exciting workshop. And that's pretty much us, just that's the AGM on the 20th of August. So.
Okay, good to hear. Okay, and are you taking, are you interested in hearing from people who are, who would be interested in the role of chair?
Absolutely. Yeah. They can contact any of the YCOS members, either myself at the Waiheke Health Trust, Maggie Wakara, who is our secretary, will have information, and also Tina Shaler is involved in those workshops.
Okay, and have you got contact details?
I certainly have. I can be contacted at the Waiheke Health Trust on 372-8893, and I can pass on the other numbers to anybody that needs them.
Right. All right, we'll get that number from you again just as we finish. Gary, do you want to talk to us a little bit about... Actually, I know that you're the manager, aren't you? The new manager?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Just under 4 months on the job now.
Right,
so.
Yeah. Oh, well, good to put a face to the name.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, welcome along. So tell us a little bit about how the Waiheke Health Trust is going, what you're doing.
Sure. For those of you out there that are a little unsure about the background of the organisation, I might just take a minute just to give a very brief overview. It was established in 1991. It's a charitable community trust. It's actually governed by 10 community elected board members. We have sort of three arms to our organisation, or three entities, I guess you'd say. One is the community provision side of the business. One is the Ostend Medical Centre. And the other one we have is the Health Trust itself. So you've actually got three entities. The Health Trust covers areas such as district nursing, child health nursing, community care in the community there, physiotherapy, a lot of allied health services. We also have some x-ray services that a lot of people aren't too sure that we have. So some people are surprised to know they can get an x-ray on the island without having to go to town. So that's available. We have about 85 staff. That includes 50 support workers that work in the community.
Yeah.
And we have five GPs, and we have teams in both locations in Ostend. So, yeah, there's a wide variety of activity occurs. A lot of it, we get involved in a sort of birth to end of life and everything in between. So it's a real wide scope of activity. Yeah, so I guess the interesting thing is that we're going through a bit of a growth phase now. We're finding ourselves busier and busier. And we're getting quite creative about how we can make things happen. And part of that is Robin is involved in some fundraising and also some events management. So watch this space. We've got a couple of exciting things happening later in this year, which will actually be of interest, I think, to local people, and those are from Auckland as well. So
Just a question, because I used to actually relieve for Waiheke Health Trust Well Child Centre.
Yes.
Now, people tell me that there's no Plunkett on the island, but I keep saying, oh, yes, but there's a Well Child Service. That's
there certainly
true,
is. There absolutely is. Yes, we do have the Well Child Service. It's based up at 72 Ostend Road. So we have a nurse there. We also have a social worker working out of that location as well. So, yeah,
right.
And that's very, very, very busy. Also link in with school health clinics also.
Yeah.
And, you know, we share that service and help support that service in conjunction with the other providers on the island too.
Really good.
Yeah.
And I've just noticed, actually, I just pulled this out of the... just out of interest, that
yes.
It's actually Men's Health Week.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know it was Men's Health Week?
I personally did know it was Men's Health Week, yes.
I was just interested because I won't say what Simon Anell said about Men's Health Week, and we won't go there. But in terms of the local pharmacy here in Oniroa is actually offering some free BP checks. So but they're actually saying here that New Zealand men go to the doctor three times less often than women, and men in general lack awareness of the importance of health screening to prevent preventable diseases.
Mm.
So, would, Would you agree with that, both of you, now that I've put you on the spot?
Yeah.
That's very true, Christina. Before I went over to the Health Trust, I was at the Medical Centre for many years, and men tend to leave it until they're unwell to go to the doctors. Obviously, women have regular checkups. It's screening prior to, you know, early prevention and all of that. So we are a lot more aware of our health and what we need to do before we get sick. Men tend to be at the bottom of the cliff sort of thing.
And why
but we're
do you
trying
think that
to
is?
Change that.
Gary.
Well, speaking as a man, and also as someone that's, and it's not probably not a great example given my role, but I guess I'm a little hesitant sometimes to actually put my own health at the forefront of my thoughts, because I've often got other things that I'm focused on. I don't really know what it is. Is it a cultural thing for some men? I'm not sure. But I think education, we just need to keep getting it out there and keep promoting it.
Yeah.
You know.
I sometimes wonder if it's an asking for help thing, do you think?
Possibly. Possibly. Yeah. There's also the she'll be right, it'll come right thing too, which is, I think, quite prevalent as well with Kiwis. Yeah.
Really, really challenging thing. And I'm just really interested to have discussed that with you, because, you know, it's something that's interested me as to why, you know, why are men not perhaps going along to take care of their health?
I think sometimes too, perhaps some men think that some of the examinations are a little more invasive than they'd be comfortable with, but it's surprising what can be screened just with a blood test these days. So I think, you know, it's a good idea to get on and learn a bit about what's involved rather than thinking it was going to be uncomfortable and embarrassing.
Yeah.
Often it's not. Often a blood test is all that's required as a first screening tool.
And perhaps we're just not, we're so used to now women screening ads and promotions and all of that kind of breast cancer awareness and cervical cancer awareness and all the screening that goes along with that. And perhaps as women, we're used to having invasive procedures, having babies
I think so.
Yeah, I think perhaps it might be quite timely to sort of look at, I think men are getting better.
Yeah.
Certainly around prostate checks, there's a lot more men doing that now. As Gary says, we can do a blood test initially, but I think if we start to promote that, most women have got the message, as you say, Karina. If we start to promote that screening process a bit more, we might see an improvement.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's, I don't know, it affects not just us, but our families, right? So, you know, I was thinking about my mother, actually, and we really had to drag her in to be seen by the hospital for her to admit, there's something not right here. So sometimes I think it can be just I'd rather not know, or
if it's okay to make a plug for television, there is a local identity, Ria Waikara, on tomorrow morning on TV1 at 10 o'clock, about his own personal struggles, and that might be a bit of encouragement for other men to see the process that he's been through and make people more aware.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's once something goes wrong, actually, we're very vigilant as to keeping tabs on our health and so on. So,
and certainly, you know, patients would have a choice of gender of the doctor that they wanted to see, as would be the same for anyone that went
in
there.
And you've got five doctors.
We have five doctors now. We've had a new doctor start just recently. Dr. Carol Smiley has just started with us.
Yeah.
We believe that we are fortunate in that just all of our staff are based on the island. So, if, you know, certainly from an emergency response point of view or needing someone quickly, our doctors and a terrific nursing team are all available, as are our community support workers, as everyone's based on the island. So it makes it a really accessible service. We're well resourced.
That's really great. Well, it's you know, it's good to know you there, and you know, may we encourage men perhaps this week to, if they haven't been in for their checkups, or if they've never had a checkup, perhaps to access Waiheke Health Trust to you know, to go and put that right. Cholesterol, blood pressure, prostate checks, all those sorts of things, eh?
Absolutely, and feel free to take a look at our website. We've just refreshed that, so that will actually give all the details to contact us, but it'll also give you an outline of the suite of services that we have as well, which are really comprehensive. There's not a heck of a lot we can't do apart
so,
from
So give us your website again.
Yeah, it's just www.waihekehealth.co.nz.
Yep. Yeah. And your phone number again for that position?
372-8893. And can I just say, as with women, early detection is the best prevention for men too.
Yeah. Great. Well, great to have you on the radio this morning. Thanks so much for coming along.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us. Great. Cheers.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
All right, and we're here now with Di from the library. Di, tell us a little bit about what your interest is at the moment.
Yes, I've just been giving Christina a bit of an idea of what I'm going to be talking about this morning. So, and it's all about Italy. So I've been on this very sensuous journey this last month. And thanks to the library resources, it's just been... You know, every day I'm doing something quite exciting, learning about Italy. So I've got, because I've got a son over there at the moment living in Florence, and we're going to go and see him. So I thought, well, I just need to learn a few Italian words and I think I'll make a bit of pasta. And then I want to learn a little bit more about, you know, Michelangelo's David, you know, up on the hill there. And of course, we actually have been to Florence back in the late 70s. So, a little bit familiar, but I just wanted to be more aware this time as an older person of what I'm going to. I want to know more about the culture. I want to know more about the history, just the authentic food that they have. So, and then of course I've got language CDs and I've borrowed those and I play them in the car. So I'm talking away and learning a few little phrases in Italian myself and just the simple things. And what's been fabulous is that, of course, you know, because I work in a library, but I really want to share with everybody how amazing, you know, what an amazing, huge resource that the library is. Because I just kind of, I go down one path and I, you know, like I've had a book out on Tuscany. And I read a bit about Tuscany and I go, oh, and you know, and in that book, of course, there's one other little thing. So I go, oh, I need to read a bit more about that. So then I'll look in the library catalogue and I'll find another book to do with that. And in fact, I had done a little bit more research on Michelangelo's David because A, you know, Bo's in Florence and B, my husband's a sculptor. So he's just made this huge, you know, David's eye, which his grandmother actually had drawn in her when she went to Elam back in the 1890s. And that's a whole other story. But it's been fascinating to learn more about the in-depth makings of David. And when you walk around David, you can only see one eye at a time. And the pupil actually has a heart in the middle, which is quite unusual as well. So, and it's looking in a particular direction. So, you know, I've just kind of learned about that. And then
Because I've been to Tuscany and Florence, I love it. It's just the most amazing. I'm envious of you going there. And the food and the wine and everything. Goodness.
And I've
always just get fat eating gelato every day.
Yes.
But, I didn't know that about David. I did see David.
Yes.
But I didn't. You see, and there you go. It's you get so much more out of your experience, don't you?
Yes.
Just knowing all those things.
Yeah, because now, of course, we'll go up there to the sculpture. And I will be walking around and going, oh, yeah, you know, that's right. You can't only see one eye at a time and it's looking in this particular direction. And, you know, of course, he had to make it, because it's tall, you know, and he had to make it so that people, you know, he's kind of carving up there around by the head, but knowing how to carve it as if you're going to be looking at it from the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, I'm going to make pasta. So, you know, because I've had a lot of food books out as well. And Bo's enjoying eating all this really authentic food that the grandma where he lives is making, you know. So he said, oh, Mum, it's just delicious. It's really, really simple, but it's gorgeous. I've never, ever, ever wanted to make pasta. I always put that in the too hard basket.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So one of my Tuscany cookbooks. Oh, here's a recipe for pasta. So I actually made it, and I determined I was not going to use a pasta machine. And I know I was going to do it, you know, the real old way.
Wow.
So out comes the rolling pin And it was just amazing. So well, I made...
Was it harder or easier than you thought?
No, totally easy. Wow. Unbelievably easy. And not that much time involved. So I made, you know, vegetarian lasagna and then we had... Is it Carbonara or whatever that one is?
Yeah.
Made the authentic recipe of that. And then I taught my other son that's back at home at the moment and we made more pasta. We made, you know, spaghetti bolognese with this beautiful... It's completely different to eat.
Yeah.
And it's half flour and my recipe is half flour and half... semolina flour.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd encourage people to have a shot.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic. Just, you know... And I've been just, you know, just exploring every single area of the culture of Italy through books, my coffee tables, chock-a-block of different things. So, and then I kind of came across a book that was called, because slow food, you know the slow food movement?
Yes.
Christina, well that
the
comes
slow
out
cooker.
Of...
Yeah.
It actually originated in Tuscany, or maybe it's north of Tuscany in Piedmont. And so I learned all about the slow movement, the slow food movement, which has been going since the late 80s. And then I learned about Terra Madre, which is Mother Earth in Italian. And there's a whole movement around that where food communities around the world, the authentic, really old food communities like from Africa and South America and, you know, you name it, come together into Italy every 2 years. They have this massive conference sharing their skills with basically body language because they've all got they don't know English or Italian.
Yep.
So these people are flown in and paid to come in because they don't have money.
Mm.
They're just living off the land. So it's fascinating to read about that as well, you know. So I've learnt so much and going, yeah, it's just been a wonderful journey. And so no matter what it is, whether it's culture, language, food, architecture, art, you know, the library's got this, you know, all you have to do is put an Italy into the search box, refine it according to your subject area, and then of course one book always leads you to another,
as
it does.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that this morning to inspire other people to, you know, no matter what topic that they are learning or interested in, you know, the library's going to have a book. And if they don't, of course, there is a place on the homepage where you can say, suggest a purchase. And if we don't have it, you know, there's a 99% chance that we'll buy it for you if it's not already in the system.
Yeah. I think it's quite a different experience, isn't it, than just getting on Google and doing some internet searches, because you're not going to pull up those really amazing books that you're talking about online.
That's
necessarily.
Right.
And
And then, you know, you find a nice sunny corner and the book's on your lap and it's usually beautiful. You know, you've got the text and the pictures, and it's a more of a hands-on heart connection when you've got a book in your hand.
Yeah.
I mean, you can Google all of what I've read, no doubt, I'm sure, but you've got, you know, like I've read the some Tuscany books where people have lived there and they're sharing their life as well as the recipes, and you know, so you get little insights to their family, and it's much more personable.
Oh, that's
so
brilliant, Dahl. Well, thanks for coming and sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
And I'm sure I'll see you before October.
Well, you need to come into the library, Christina.
I will come into the library.
Anyway, thank you.
You're welcome.
Kia ora.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa.